Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to the Motormouth podcast with Harry Benjamin and Tim Silvey. This is the place where we meet some of the biggest names in and around motorsport, chat about their lives and everything in between. Don't forget to like and subscribe, and you can also leave us a review. Download the Motormouth app where you can get live race times, exclusive video content from MMTV, create your own social profile and check up on all the latest happenings with whatever motorsport takes your fancy.
Welcome to the 14th episode of the Motormouth podcast and the fourth show of 2020. Alongside me as always, Mr. Harry Benjamin, how are you?
Hello, I'm all right, thank you. How are you?
Very well. What have you been up to, you theatrical person, you?
Yeah, well, indeed. I'm fresh from performing 21 musical numbers in one evening, which was stressful, to say the least.
21?
21, yes, that was the set list. Yeah.
You sung 21 songs?
Yes, I had seven solos.
Want to give us a...
No,
little
absolutely
rendition.
Not. No, my voice is a bit sore this morning, so we'll leave it be, shall we?
Darling.
Grease is the word, though. I'll just say that. Yeah, that's all right. And then I just got back from Wales for a christening, which is a trek and a half.
Yeah.
And I just finished Drive to Survive on Netflix.
Yes,
and I must say,
we'll have a chat about
that. It is incredible.
Yeah, don't give anything away. I think, how many...
The season's already happened, so it's kind of spoiled already.
Well, I'm on number, I think, number five.
Okay.
I've just, or four maybe, I've done the one where they basically roast Gasly.
Yeah, Gasly does get a bit of a hard time.
Yeah, yeah. So here we are this week, born in, now I've got to get this right, not Dorset, Southampton, correct, but Berkshire raised. Jenny Gow is with us. She made her break in Formula One in 2010, and you can find her reporting on the likes of the BBC today. She's covered Formula E, MotoGP, and a host of other sports, including rowing, and I believe she was a Cox herself. We'll talk about that later. Cricket, netball, women's football, and can even be found on Radio 5 Live's Fighting Talk. She's a Dare to be Different ambassador promoting women in motorsport and has been nominated for Best Radio Documentary of the Year with her work on BBC's James Hunt special. She received acclaim for producing and presenting a documentary on the BBC to start the very worthwhile debate on grid girls, which have now become grid kids. She runs the London Marathon, has an interest in cookery, politics and animals, and did you know she's allergic to milk, hence the green tea?
Yeah.
Yes. Welcome, Jenny Gow, to the Motormouth podcast. How are you doing?
I'm almost bored by myself. That was a very long intro.
It was.
Fascinating.
Yeah, well, that's you. It's you in a nutshell. We're done.
Boring and fascinating.
I don't know how you can confuse Dorset for Southampton, though. That was...
Yeah, so on my notes, I had Dorset instead of Southampton, which is weird. Actually, that came from Wikipedia. So
there you go. There's your first mistake. Yeah.
Do not copy and paste from Wikipedia. First mistake.
It's basically my night before copy-paste job.
God.
So let's take it back to those early years. So Southampton born, but Berkshire raised, where you moved when you were, I think, about 7 years old, if Wikipedia is telling me correctly.
Yeah, something like that.
So tell us about those early days, your childhood, your growing up. Was there any indication that you would go on to become one of the country's leading female broadcasters?
I'm still waiting to become one of the country's leading female sports broadcasters. So I always shy away from that because I just do what I love doing. Was there any indication? I suppose the coxing thing was quite a good indication, because you have to be quite gobby.
Right.
You're basically shouting at other people and telling them what to do. Maybe I should have been a producer. That would have been more sensible.
Yes, because I'm assuming you have a lot of people in your ear that are telling you to say this, do this, go here.
That's the dream. Doesn't always happen quite like that, actually. Sometimes there's just silence. But most of the time, yes, you do have quite a lot of people telling you what to do.
And it was obviously sports has always been a passion in general from a young age.
Which is weird.
Yeah.
Because most people say, oh, my parents loved sport and I went to the grounds with what I did there. No. My parents are the least sporty people you can imagine.
That is weird.
I just fell in love with the competitive nature of sport. And this is such a... So I will use the word goober. For those who don't know what the word goober is, is someone who... bit of a nerd, but a nice way of calling someone a nerd. An affectionate term is a goober.
Right.
And I learnt this when I started in F1. And I was a total goober. When I used to watch athletics, I used to take note of all of the results. And I have massive wadges of paper at home with, like, the European Championships, World Athletic Championships, all of those, especially the rowing side of it. Mm. And, I used to take notes on all of them. And that, I think, has led me to taking notes on Formula One, because I'm still... Am I allowed to say the word anal about it?
In that context, fine.
We'll save that other bit for later. Yes,
that comes towards the end.
Edit that
stay
out
tuned.
Later.
Are you good at retaining those statistics and that knowledge? Like, if you're in front of camera or you're speaking on the radio, do you have those notes in front of you? Or are you quite good at regurgitating stuff that you've picked up over the years?
So I work with Jack Nicholson, Jolyon Palmer, who are like 12, and they haven't forgotten anything ever. They both have the most analytical minds of anybody I've ever met. So you talk to Jack, he hardly makes notes because he retains this information. Jolyon Palmer can tell you exactly like the results of the MRF race that happened in 2008. It's shocking how much they can retain their information. I'm writing everything down. I have no short-term memory. I'm like a goldfish.
Yeah, well, join the
club.
So,
really looking forward to your quiz.
Yeah.
Really,
really.
Because I just feel like, well, did that happen?
You'll
no, you're making it up.
Yeah, that wasn't me talking.
It's a hard one, I'll give you that. We were pre-listening to it before, and I went, oh, Tim, I think that one's actually a bit too hard. I think we've got to give her a bit more on that one.
Right, thanks.
Okay, that's interesting. So is it still very much a pen and paper kind of industry when you're running around the pit lane? You are
nobody else uses a pen and paper, I don't think.
Really?
I have a notebook. I mean, Ted's coined the phrase of Ted's notebook, hasn't he?
Of course.
But I actually have a notebook for every season. I use one notebook per season. In fact, where's my... Hang on.
This is
so
exciting.
I meant to bring in last year's notebook so that you could see. Sorry, off mic, but this adds to the effect. So this... I've got a new notebook. This will be my notebook for the year. It's purple. It's A6, which is small.
So poor, but you can fit it in your pocket.
Is that one of those fancy moleskin jobs?
No, it's dead cheap. Look, feel. Oh. Got it off internet.
It's a lovely shade of purple.
It is a nice shade of purple. I haven't had a purple notebook yet. I've had a lot of colours. The snazzy pink one was a real win with the drivers. So yeah, this keeps all of my info. I've just realised though, the lines are quite spaced out.
Yeah, you're not going to get much
drivers,
on there.
That's going to be tough. Mm. But so yeah, I have to write everything down, because in the pit lane, you can't just grab your laptop. You can't look up on Wikipedia exactly what happened in the 2011 Canadian Grand Prix. Know it. So
I think we all know that one.
Oh, come on. Please let one of the quiz questions be that.
Have you ever had that moment, though, where you think, oh, crap, I've completely forgotten everything?
Never.
That's an affirmative.
I mean, you have it all the time, especially when you have such a fluid show as the three of us have. We very rarely sit down and plan out exactly what we're going to say, even what our talking points are sometimes, because the nature of our show is that we just get in a room and chat.
Yeah.
Or we go into the pit lane and chat, whatever it may be. So, yes, there are moments when you're fumbling around in your brain trying to find the word or trying to find a fact, and... there's nothing there. The cupboard is bare.
But I suppose at least you've got the three of you there to rely on. So someone might have
a bit
of a blank.
You'd like
someone
to say
jump
that,
in.
Wouldn't you? You'd like to think, like us in a room right now, we've all got each other's backs. But sometimes Jack and Jolyon, I can almost hear them sniggering, going, "How long can we leave her on this one?" I mean, we are a very good team of working together. We've got each other's backs, but there is that, come on, let's just stitch the other person up quite a lot of the time.
Julian's taken to broadcasting like a duck to water, isn't he?
I mean, I don't think he needs any more praise. He has come into this.
Jenny's here to bring everyone down a notch.
Phenomenal. Yeah. I mean, he is, hand on heart, I think he's the best co-commentator I have ever worked with.
Yeah, he's really good.
He brings insight. He's just really good at what he does. And he can flip into lead commentator role as well, which is almost unprecedented for a co-commentator to be able to slip into that lead role. He's a bright guy. You know, racing, I think we can all say, made it to F1, average in F1.
Yeah.
He won't mind me saying that.
He had his go.
He had a rough time, didn't he? Let's
he had
honest.
A really rough, I gave him a really rough time as well.
Was there any awkwardness there?
Oh, so much. Every time we get drunk on the road, it comes up.
Oh, no.
It's one of those subjects. We very rarely get drunk on the road, I have to say. But when we do,
yeah,
once or twice a year, it'll go, yeah, Baku. That was fun. Yeah. Yeah, we had a big falling out.
Really?
Yeah, in Baku. Because I asked him a question he didn't like.
Right, yeah.
And we have to...
That's your job.
We have to do that. I mean, yeah. Ben Hunt...
Oh yeah.
From The Sun has got loads of grief from Drive to Survive for asking a question.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, it's our job to ask awkward questions to make people uncomfortable sometimes. We are not there to be post boys and girls for Formula One. And sometimes you have to go to an awkward place and ask an awkward question. And that may well compromise your supposed friendship, but nobody's really your friend in Formula One. In motorsport, I think it might be the same. I'm not 100% sure. But I think, you know, you have to cross the line sometimes. Otherwise, you will just be there in marketing. We're not marketeers, we're journalists.
Yeah, and you want a reason, you know, there's a reason people, you want people to give a reason to people to go to the BBC coverage or whatever it is that you're doing, because you want to be like, you're asking the unique question, you're putting them on the spot, aren't you?
I mean, people use the term clickbait a lot nowadays, and especially if you look at The Mail or The Sun, you know, they go for the big sensationalist headline. It's not about that. I think it's about being responsible as a journalist to yourself and to the coverage. And it's about bringing a truth to people at home who aren't in your position, especially in the paddock. It's such a privileged place to be, whatever paddock you are in, that you want to put the listener in that situation as closely as they can. You want to ask the questions they want to ask. So for me, it's not about asking a question that will make for a great headline. It's about asking the right question at the right time to make sure the people at home have as much information or are finding things fun or are excited and enthused. And in the end, bringing more fans to the sport, because that's beneficial for everybody. I will get off a soapbox. Sorry. I'm off it now.
You're off it?
A little bit.
Okay.
It's still there.
Never quite goes away.
No.
Do you find it still, I'd imagine when you first start out in this industry and when you're put into the deep end of a paddock and you've got to talk to a Hamilton or whoever it might be, and you've got to ask an awkward question and you get that sort of nerves and adrenaline kicking through, do you still get that even now, or do you feel like, screw it, I'm just going to ask the question, I'm not worried about it, let's get on with this?
No, I think you still get it. On occasion, not as often, but I am trying to describe it as, if you can imagine you're going down a ski jump and you know what's coming and you can't really stop it, and you know the fear's there, and you're aware of that maybe for a whole interview, that, you know, you're going to, at the end, you're going to do that big jump.
Yeah.
And it's not letting that kind of overtake you. So, yeah, the first year I did Silverstone for F1, I had to interview Schumacher. So that was 2011.
And that was that your, what was your first year in Formula One?
Was 2011 was my first year,
yeah.
I did three races in 2011 and then I went full time in 2012.
Right.
And Silverstone was one of those. So I also did Canada, which was my first race, and then Hungary. So I picked some real goodies.
Yeah.
But yes, walking up to the motorhome, knowing that I was going to sit down with, I mean, the Michael Schumacher. There aren't, you know, when you're thinking about legends of a sport, there aren't many out there that really take your breath away. I think anyone would say Michael Schumacher is up there. If you know motorsport, you don't. So yeah, that was nerve-wracking, and to start with that was, yeah, full on. Nothing will ever be as hard as that.
Yeah, a bit of a baptism of fire.
Yeah.
Is there any interviews that stick in your mind that you think back and think, God, that was a horrible experience, that it was a particularly awkward interview, or, you know, something straight after a crash, which I imagine you have to do quite often. But is there an individual where you think, I really don't want to go through that again?
I think Alonso, Montreal, must have been 2012. And Montreal was really strange. They kind of had these tents at the back of the garages that were additional storage for tyres and all of that gubbins. And
Gooper,
he,
gubbins are really,
I know, sorry.
Loving the language. Oh, yeah.
Thanks, that's my job. He was really cross that he'd crashed out of the race. I think he'd lost his front wing. It was all a bit of a mess. And he slammed the door open, and the door actually hit my hand. And I've still got the scar to this day on my hand of where it hit me, because it kind of cut me a little bit. But he kept his helmet on. He was not speaking to anybody. And you always know, don't you? That's the sign. So that was an interview that never was an interview, because really he should have spoken to us, but he wasn't going to. Mm. So it's a bit like, you know, Vettel, Montreal last year, the interview that never happened.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's quite memorable. A good one, I'll flip it around because I always like to come as positive as I can, I suppose. Hamilton in, it would have been his first year at Mercedes in Brazil. And I, once a year, I get to sit down with Lewis and do a feature interview. And it was one of my first with him. We were sitting in this very cramped room, a little bit like this, actually, only with a tin roof because it was Sao Paulo. And at the end of the interview, I switched off my recorder, which is nothing as impressive as this. It's a tiny little recorder.
Yeah.
And he said, oh, is that it? Is that all in there, in that box? And I was like, yeah, that's it. That's us done. And he said, oh, I think I've told you too much. I shouldn't have said some of that stuff. And I was like, great, bye! And now, in hindsight, I realise I think he says that after every feature interview to make the journalists feel good about themselves or the presenter.
Yeah.
I think he's genuinely quite charming because it's in his interest.
Yeah. Yeah, he knows what he's doing.
Yeah, if you go away thinking, nailed it, then you're in a good space, aren't you?
Yeah, yeah. How do you find him? I mean, I dealt with him a couple of times. Was it last
what
year?
What did you have to do?
Because I did some work with Mercedes, with one of their sponsors, and we had to go and interview Lewis for... It was with Epsom. So I was working with Epsom at the time. We had to go and interview Lewis at the factory, and I'd never met him before, and he came up, and I found him incredibly intense. Like, I shook his hand and he gave a proper grip and sort of looked into my soul. Like, I was like, wow, your eyes are really penetrating my head. And just found him really intense, but he was such a perfectionist. Like, we had an auto cue going, and I don't think he finds reading off an auto cue the easiest thing in the world. No. And he was fumbling over a few words, and he was so determined to get it right. Like, we couldn't stop until it was perfect. He was a real perfectionist just doing that. So, you know, you can see why he's such an intense, incredible driver, because he takes everything that seriously, doesn't he?
Yeah, and he really splits opinion, doesn't he?
He does, yeah.
There isn't really anyone that goes, well, you know, Lewis, meh.
No.
And I've always got on... You can't say you get on with him really well. He's one of the biggest superstars in the world in the sporting arena. But we've always kind of had something, a connection there. The first time I ever met him was to do a feature interview at testing. And I didn't know what to expect. And he turned up. I was with my producer, and we were at the bottom of the steps up into his motorhome. And he said, after you, ladies. Mm. And I definitely wasn't expecting that, because most of the people I'd worked with before then would have just bounded up and left it for dust, and you'd just kind of follow them.
Yeah.
And he gave a great interview. He's a great orator for the sport. He really is.
Do you think in... general sport he is underrated as being one of the all-time greats, because you always think he gets overlooked for a lot of things, because his achievements are spectacular. He is, as you say, one of sport's greatest legends, but he just always seems to fall a little bit below the radar when in terms of general sport as well, and appealing to fans.
I think, I mean, if he was a footballer, would he be one of the biggest sports stars in the world? Quite probably.
Yeah.
But would he be like Beckham? Whereas when he was playing, he was demonised, he was hated. You know, there were some vicious things that happened to David Beckham along the way. Probably. And after Beckham stopped playing, he became the legend that he is now. And I wonder if it'll be like that while he's still in a car, while he's still driving, while he's still competing. No one will admit what a talent he is.
Yeah.
But the minute he decides to hang up his helmet, I think everyone will be like, oh, amazing. But I really don't understand the whole knighthood thing.
No.
John Surtees never got a knighthood.
No.
Which I still don't really understand. I don't know if there's political things going on. I don't know if they've turned them down. I just don't understand it. But why he is not a knight or hasn't been offered a knighthood, I honestly don't know.
Will that be a case of once he retires, then he'll...
Yeah, but why?
Just seems like that's the case of it. But then again, you say John Surtees and people like that haven't ever got one.
Well, so. Has it been given to other motorsport people? I don't know. Because maybe it's just that the sport is a bit
Stewart
too... Got?
Jackie Stewart's got knighthood.
When did he get his? Long time ago.
Is this part of the quiz or...?
No.
You get a bonus point.
Yeah, bonus point. I have a feeling it was probably later than it should have been, but that's just me pure.
I think you're right. Maybe, you know, later on, but well after
Frank
he's
Williams
retired.
Obviously has a knighthood. I'm not sure when that happened. Why? I mean, if only Jack were here, you pick the
he
wrong
would
person.
Know. He would know, wouldn't he? He would know.
No, he'd look it up on Wikipedia pretty quickly.
Yeah, we all know Wikipedia is a trusted source.
Did you see that video when Lewis took Frank out
amazing.
I genuinely nearly made me cry.
Oh.
If you haven't seen it, you must watch it.
It's brilliant.
My dad is a doctor and a surgeon. He was Sir Frank's registrar when he had his accident back in the day. Yeah. Because my dad worked under Sid Watkins.
Amazing.
Did I not tell you this?
You and I can host.
I think it's the first time I said it. Oh God, I don't know that much. But yeah, so see, my dad was like, Sid Watkins was like his mentor or whatever, and used to work for him in England, in London, working at various hospitals, and then Sid went around the world doing the motorsport.
That's amazing.
And then when Sir Frank had his accident, Sid was obviously quite hands-on with that, and my dad was there as well, sort of being a registrar and being sort of the deputy assistant role in that kind of thing for a little bit before he went on and had further surgery and things like that.
That's incredible.
Yeah, it's quite incredible,
isn't
it?
Did he come home and tell you?
Not at the time,
no. You'll never guess what happened today.
Well, when it happened, I'm not sure if I was alive. So,
leave the room now.
This is a story from back in the day. That's my claim to sort of half fame.
I think you should get your dad on the next podcast.
I do.
To be fair.
I mean, you said you've got a thing in front of you, which means you can phone someone.
Dial him in.
Dial him in.
Yeah, well, that's the only famous person he's ever told me about.
I was
going to
say, is that his top trump?
Yeah. Oh, 100%. Oh, no, his other top trump, he was once on an ITV documentary with Adrian Childs.
What the hell?
No, that is not a top
Yeah,
trump.
But he was just into, it was like going around like he's a neurosurgeon, so he was like Adrian Childs was doing some show about top five neurosurgeons. I have never seen this show since.
What's the guy's name?
Yeah.
Jonathan.
John. Johnny?
No, absolutely not.
Money. One of the top neurosurgeons in the world.
J-Dog.
Oh, there we go. Yes, here we go. Let's put a nice marketing J-Dog. Spin on it. Here we
Love
go.
It.
Anyway, that's the tangent there.
Hi,
sorry.
Dad.
Hi, Dad. Hope you're listening to it.
We learn something new about each other.
We do, yeah. He's got an album out. He sings as well.
Shush.
It's well, are you going to do a duet for me? Because you both sing.
We should record a duet.
A Motormouth. We need better mics than this.
A Motormouth jingle.
A bit of auto-tune as well.
We could record a new jingle.
Hang on a minute. You said you were singing Grease earlier.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, which one of you is Danny, and which one's Sandy?
Well, you've got dark hair and you're tall.
So I'd probably be Danny.
You're 6 foot five.
Yes.
I'm 6 foot.
So you're not that small, to be fair. But you're lighter haired.
I'm the girl.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I've got the leather jacket, so...
Tell me more.
Oh,
she's good.
That's the clip right there for the teaser.
Small bucks.
Let's
that's why
go
I never
back
made
to,
it onto Sky.
Yeah. Well, that's coming up in the quiz later.
Great.
Let's, if we can dive back a little bit, but go back to you, because
yeah,
I hate the attention being on me. let's go, so just pre-Formula One, what was your sort of route to getting there in the first place? So if we go back to sort of university and then how you worked your way up the ranks.
Okay, so I dropped out of university. It wasn't for me.
Yes, so did I.
So did I. High five.
Woo!
Screw
high
you.
Five.
Harold? Yes.
Uni is a waste of time. And I have to do career talks every now and then. I was very kindly invited back to my old school, Piggott in Wargrave.
Piggott.
And I stood there and said, basically, uni isn't great for everybody.
Where the teacher's like, stop! Stop!
pull back! Why did we get her?
Yeah.
I think university is great for some people. Like, if you want to be a neurosurgeon, You know, Jonathan had to go to university to get there.
Yes.
If you want to be a racing driver,
Jonathan.
Not so much.
I love that.
Although Jolyon Palmer did go to university. Yeah. Fascinating fact.
Oh.
Yeah, exactly. So I dropped out of university because I didn't like being told what to do. And also, I thought that I could probably achieve more by leaving and actually getting practical experience than I could by sitting in a classroom being told to deconstruct Judge Dredd.
Was it? But it was a media-related
course. It was, media communications, right. With a minor in psychology.
Okay. Oh, wow. That's a...
Yeah.
Interesting combination.
Well, it goes together really well if you well, think about it. You've got to know the psychology of someone to be able to open them up, to be able to get them to talk, to be able to do a great interview. Anyway,
I digress. Did you go to university?
I dropped out, clearly. So, I had fun in Bristol for 6 months and thought, no, not for me. And just went and got real experience working in real companies. So I knew I wanted to do sports journalism. And not because I see a diversity issue that in 10 years' time I can be one of the, females in the sport. I just wanted, I loved it. And I didn't know it was motorsport necessarily that I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. So I did lots of different jobs. My first, I suppose, break was I got the role as production secretary working on Sports Personality of the Century.
Oh, right. Wow. So what does that mean when you're a production secretary?
So you are in the office calling guests.
Right.
Making sure the logistics are behind it, and you're doing all the grunt work.
Yeah.
You're helping do a few research notes. You're as junior as you can get, so you're making a lot of tea and coffee for
people.
But
you thought, this is my foot in the door.
It was sports related. It was in the BBC. It was the Television Centre. And yep. I don't know if any of you have been to Television Centre, but I was talking about it at the weekend. The moment you get a job for the BBC is pretty special. And yeah. I still remember exactly where it was. I was in a house that I was sharing in Reading. I got the phone call from my to-be boss, and he said, we'd like to offer you the job. And I could not believe my luck. I'd done work experience at the BBC for 2 weeks, unpaid. I was just, whatever I could do, I did. And at the end of that period, I had a few job offers. And I was trying to work out which was the best, and I just went for Sports Personality of the Century, because let's face it, who wouldn't? You get to meet everybody.
Yeah.
So I did that. I took the call. I was delighted. I walked into Television Centre the first time, and I could, even now, the hairs goosebumps. On my arm are just going, because it's such an incredible privilege to work for the BBC, but to walk into that building and know you're now a staff member.
Mm, amazing.
It was just incredible. So anyway, to cut a long story short, did that, met lots of famous people. It was amazing. Decided, though, that long term, I didn't really want to be a production secretary, obviously. So my boss sat down with me and said, look, let's look through Ariel, which is the in-house magazine at the BBC at the time. I think it still is. And we looked at all the different jobs around the country that I could potentially go for that would change my career and become a presenter, because I knew I wanted to be a journalist and presenter. And we found one down in Southampton, which was doing traffic and travel. And that was one of several that I applied for, but I got that one. It worked because I was born in Southampton. Mm-hmm. I had a connection with it anyway. And that was my break into being on air, I suppose. Talent. I mean, not very talent.
I hate
doing
that
traffic
word,
and travel.
Like, talent is always
Yeah, my favourite memory from that was when somebody, I'm doing a traffic update, which isn't the easiest thing to do, I have to say, because you've got like 20
seconds.
It seems
like it's more complicated than it probably seems.
You've got to be across all of the problems that might be happening, and it's not someone just gives you a script read.
You do it yourself,
You do it yourself. You're remote from the studios. So I was on a jetty in the middle of like the harbour in Southampton, and I shared it with a guy who did commercial radio as well. So we had a very small partition. We used to make sure we weren't broadcasting at the same time. I'm broadcasting, giving an update about, the Isle of Wight, and there's some traffic cones or whatever. And he walks round. He has a large rubbish bin. And while I'm broadcasting, he tips the entire contents onto my head. There have been lots of hijinks along the way. That one still sticks out as one of the best. Got brought into the main office quite quickly after doing traffic and travel. You prove yourself there, and then you get sort of sucked up the ladder.
Mm. Is that quite a traditional routine? Like, if there's anyone listening who's a young male or female person that wants to get involved in broadcasting, is that the sort of traditional route? You go in as a researcher or a production
assistant? We're talking about 100 years ago now, so things might have changed a bit, because it's not when I started. But certainly I remember Katie Hill, who used to present Blue Peter. She became where she is from being a production secretary.
That's what I wanted to do, Blue Peter.
Yeah, I auditioned, actually.
Did you?
Yeah, got told I looked too young.
Huh.
Weird, huh? Who knew?
Huh.
Wow.
I mean, you're both looking at me as if to say too young.
How long ago was this audition?
Yes.
Way too young. 21.
Have you got a badge?
Yeah. Why are you not wearing it?
I don't know. I should wear it every day. It's a white one. It's not the more rare purple one.
Oh.
That's not rare.
What did you do? Did you sing?
No. No. I did a thing with Jamie Chadwick. It comes up on every bloody
Jamie
podcast.
Jamie bloody Chadwick.
She's lost hers.
What?
I had a conversation with her this weekend. She has lost it. She's lost her Blue Peter badge.
She had a purple one.
She's an idiot.
She
won't mind me saying that.
So
she might.
It always comes up. We talk about Jamie far too much in this podcast because I always bark on about
the manager.
Blah, blah, blah.
Oh, yeah. And I remember you saying.
We got her this gig with Blue Peter. They gave her a purple badge, and I was like, can I have one? And they were like, no. So I was like really upset because I was obsessed with Blue Peter as a kid and always wanted to be a Blue Peter.
How old were you at this point?
36, 35.
Okay, so it's
36.
Not that long
ago.
This is recent.
You actually were.
Yeah.
Oh, right,
yeah.
Okay.
So,
awkward. I was like, oh, no, you're really young, obviously.
And the guy at the end of filming...
Crying. I
really wanted a badge. And at the end of filming, the guy came up to me, gave me a little wink. I can't remember his name, with the big... He's got a fro. And he put his hand in my hand and sort of palmed me, this Blue Peter badge. Like,
you haven't enlisted
that was illegal.
He didn't even say anything, and then he just walked off.
Mysterious.
And that was it, because they just don't give him out.
He's a big motorsport fan though, yeah, so you're onto a winner. Mm.
Yeah, he's a nice chap. Actually.
Well, you should give yours to Jamie.
It's not going to happen.
In return for her coming on,
if she comes
that.
On the podcast, yeah, she can have my Blue Peter badge.
Shall okay. I message her now and tell her?
Well, tell her. We've tried a few times already, and right, she's just a bit busy. Woman.
I'm going to message her now.
Message
Jamie.
Her now. So Tim says Chadders. You can have his Blue Peter badge.
Tim says
if you come on the podcast,
his Blue
because we've already
badge.
Had her boss. We've had Catherine on.
Yeah,
we've had one of her colleagues, Abby.
Yeah,
And we're just missing her now, really. So
yeah,
I've sent a message.
Special prize. Anyway, we digress once again.
Do you want me to really fast forward this story? Otherwise, we're going to be here a yes. long
go
time.
On then.
I'm
go
just
on.
Blathering on. Yes. The long and short of it is, got brought in to do other stuff at the BBC.
Yeah.
Became a sports journalist there. Was working with Peter Crouch and those sorts of people at the training grounds at Portsmouth, Southampton, and Bournemouth. And then just decided that there wasn't much progression at the BBC, and I was in a hurry to get on with my career, so I left. The next day, Sam Matterface mm-hmm. gave me a call and said, come and work for me. I was like, yeah, okay, I was going to have the summer off and watch the Olympics, but I'll do that instead. And yeah, just became a sports presenter and journalist. Someone, bumped into me at Bridgewater Speedway and said, oh, do you fancy coming and, being the face of our event in 2 weeks' time and presenting it? I was like, yeah, sure, whatever. I've never done long track, but mm-hmm.
Let's
I'll
do
love
it.
It.
Yeah.
And that was the start.
Brilliant.
So it's just random chance meetings with people.
Yeah, it's often the way.
There's no automatic, there's no set out route, is there, really, for anybody?
Just work hard.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to work hard anymore.
Yeah.
Like, literally, you speak to any 17-year-old, all they want to do is be an Instagram influencer.
Yeah.
And you've got to work hard. There is no substitute for it.
But even doing that, it's not straightforward. You can't just magic up a million followers. Even that has, you've got to put the work in and the time. Listen, motorsport, historically, not so much anymore, has been a man's world, right? But some of the people we've had on this podcast actually are starting to change that a little bit. We've had Nikki Shields, you've got Lee McKenzie, Catherine Bonmuir, who we've had, Claire Williams.
How do you say that surname?
I can say it correctly. This one can't.
Catherine Bonmuir. Muir? Yeah, that's right. Muir.
How did you say it before?
I don't even know.
Moir.
You said it like a cat would say it.
It was like a meow.
Like it.
I was too afraid of her to ask it to begin with, but she's lovely.
She's so nice.
She's absolutely bonkers, but is in a
love
brilliant
it.
Way.
Did you listen to that one?
Yes, actually,
she's
I did. I listened to
awesome.
It on the journey down south.
She's so funny. Have you ever experienced, do you feel like it still exists, this whole it's a man's world,
yep.
you're a little female doing a man's job, get out of here?
Not so much a little female doing a man's role, but I think paddocks can just be quite male.
Mm.
They just are.
Yeah.
So I think it's a real stretch for people to get out of that way of thinking, especially some of the older generation, who are lovely and they treat you very kindly and nicely, but there's no way avoiding it. People do treat you differently still.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying I want to be treated exactly the same as my male colleagues or whatever, but I think it's a generational thing.
Yeah.
So I, give it another 20 years. I think we will all be treated the same. But at the moment, we're in that crossover period. So I think there is a slight difference. And let's not forget that racing drivers still go out there and risk their lives
yeah.
for the sport we all love. And there is always going to be an attitude of work hard, drive hard, risk everything, play hard. And, you know, if you don't have to look back very far, we're talking about 70s, 80s, for it still to be a Playboy paddock. Mm-hmm. And yes, we've come forward from that, but there are still people who work there in the 70s and 80s who have the same mentality. I've never been treated badly in the paddock because I'm female, but there is just that sort of air of privilege around some people.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I don't think I've ever met a female that has that same air of privilege, because we've never driven in Formula One and we don't have that.
And they probably don't even realise they're doing it. It's just inherently in them. And talking of the sort of, you know, the Playboy paddock, or, you know, however you want to coin it, you've been vocal about grid girls in the past.
And my husband is always like, just shut up about that. Stop going on about it. Otherwise, you'll be like labelled as the person. But and I'm like, oh, sorry.
It's an interesting subject. You know, what did you do at the time when grid girls were still there? What did you try and do to move that process on and bring it up to speed with the modern day?
So grid girls had been a bugbear of mine for quite some time, because I'm on the grid and I see it week in, week out when I'm on the grid, and it doesn't matter which motorsport I was doing. Is there like a thunderstorm outside?
I felt that.
It's coronavirus happening and we just haven't been told. Everybody else has left the building.
Did you feel that?
I did.
That
was this like is the last thing people will hear. That the last broadcast. Wow.
Are we the only people left on Earth right now?
Can I have some anti-back gel?
It's all sold out.
There is some downstairs when we leave.
Yeah, I'm taking it when I leave. It's the only place you can get some. They'll never notice.
Honestly.
So even on the grid, when I was going to like karting events, there'd be quite like busty women.
Scantily clad.
Like, this is weird. It's a karting event for children. Mm. And it just sat very uncomfortably with me as we try and progress everybody's rights within motorsport. And you must know, Tim, because you come from a marketing background.
Yeah.
It doesn't fit now.
No.
It doesn't fit with the marketing strategies of large companies. It doesn't fit with the family audience that Formula One wants to try and attract. So as soon as Liberty came in, there was an opportunity there to try and change things. So I spoke to a few people. I came up with a program idea, which, you know, I'm still really proud of. And I wanted to set out, although I have to be the impartial journalist, I wanted to promote people to try and talk about it and have a discussion. And that's what we did on air. Now, I didn't know it at the time, but that programme made its way back into sort of F1 towers. It was played to some people who are quite responsible, like the decision makers. Mm. A couple of the big brands heard it as well. And decided that although the conversation had already started, it was just a way of speeding it up. And the decision came around pretty quickly that grid girls were going to be axed. The way that they did it was just really awkward, because it highlighted the wrong thing. It should have been a positive message. It came out as a negative message. Mm. But it's changed. And I would say nobody notices.
No, absolutely. And it's weird, because I've only just thought about it now, but thinking back to the coverage when it all came out, there were a load of grid girls who were really pissed off.
Yep.
But, you know, that's my job.
Yeah.
You know, I get paid to go and stand on that grid. I want to be there.
Yeah.
And you sort of forget, but now I look back and you're right, you don't notice. And I think grid kids is brilliant.
I got so much heat.
I'm sure.
Yeah. You can imagine my Twitter was just people just saying, I hate you, you know, you've brought an end to motorsport. I love motorsport because of boobs. It's like, do you? Do you really love motorsport because of boobs? Am I really doing lots of people out of a job?
Yeah.
Most people who become a grid girl aren't doing it to be a grid girl. They are doing it because they want to get into motorsport, because they want to become an influencer, because they want to become marketing.
Yeah.
They're not doing it to, that's not the end result.
Mm.
Yeah. And I always said, if you give them a voice to be a brand ambassador, that is totally different. But the girls were getting told not to speak to anybody unless they were spoken to. This is not the day and age for that. I'm sorry. It was just horrible.
They're still around there, aren't they? In some British touring cars, they still have grid girls?
I can't recall off the top of my head. I know Formula E definitely don't. They didn't have any from the start.
I mean, now, like you say, from a marketing perspective, brands just wouldn't tolerate it. You know, the brands that we talk to in the day job, it's all about sustainability, green, good practice,
equality, all of that,
inclusion. Yeah. They just don't. Well, they wouldn't want to be associated with it. Yeah. So well done, you.
Well, I'm not going to take credit for it, but I'm incredibly proud that I was a little piece in that.
So working obviously in Formula One, it must be incredible, but you've had the privilege of working at other motorsports as well, particularly along the way, and also most recently Formula E. Of course. So how was that? Because obviously you did the main coverage when it was back on ITV. Was that a couple of years ago now, wasn't it?
Five, 6 years ago.
God, was it that long
I know
ago?
We've aged.
Wow. But you were back on the BBC just the week had just gone.
Yeah.
So how was that? Was it good to be back?
It was lovely to be back. I have actually missed working in FE. I think it's such a revolutionary series. I think it's really progressive, and it's a very open championship, and it just is really appealing to a lot of people for a lot of reasons. I know it's quiet racing, and you know the cars come out and you're practicing your links or whatever, and you can still practice your links because it's silent almost. It was just great to be back, and I was delighted to have been asked to present the BBC's coverage.
Is that is this a regular thing, or is this just a one-off at the moment?
So the BBC have the rights for two races this season. The first one, obviously, Marrakesh. The second one, Rome. The race is due to take place on the 4th of April.
It's
a little bit coronavirus.
Well, hang on a minute. Let me even... Is it the 4th or the 3rd? Let me just check my... I mean, there's a lot of references. You see,
Close for comfort.
I think Italy have put the ban in place that no one can watch sporting events or do any large gatherings until the 3rd of April. I mean, I'm expecting it to go.
I think
I'm expecting half of my work this year to disappear. Really? Like
it's affecting everybody, isn't
it?
Oh,
that was a very...
There we go.
Hang on. Oh, I just licked my fingers. That's coronavirus.
That's and on our mic as well, Jeff.
We're all doomed. Sorry.
Goodness sake.
At the time of recording, we were all alive.
Yes.
Rookie coronavirus era.
This is a public health announcement. Wash your hands immediately.
Well, there you go. If the work dries up, you can do that.
Put on my voice.
Yeah. Let's delve a bit more into Formula E and sort of Formula One. Do you have... It must be hard to go. They're very different, so I always hate it when people compare.
You cannot compare radio to TV.
You can't.
You cannot compare writing to broadcasting. They are different entities. They were never meant to be compared against each other, really. I think the one issue that I'd bring up is the fact that what is Formula One's long-term plan right now? Because I see Formula E with a long-term plan. I get where they're going. And at the moment, I don't think I understand where Formula One are going. Yeah. I love it, and I'd be happy to, you know, stay as it is forever. But when Lewis goes, and when we're not driving petrol cars, then what is the relevance of it?
Yeah.
And why will people who are Generation X, Y, and Z, what's going to inspire them to get out of their seats and go and watch a Formula One race? I don't know at the moment, and I think nobody knows, which is why everybody's going, well, what are we going to do?
I wonder if it'll become just this sort of historical legacy series that, you know, they're allowed because of that reason to race in combustion or semi-combustion engines, and it just becomes a bit of a blast to the past.
But if there's no development aiding cars on road cars, which is one of the big points about Formula One right now, is that they
brands
what they do on track helps the automotive industry massively. If you look at the way that they've used the hybrid engine, for example, the efficiency in a
fuel
Formula
efficiency.
One, don't want to talk too much about it because it's getting into the nitty-gritty, but the efficiency of a hybrid engine now from where it was when it began to now is incredible.
It's amazing.
And that means that hybrid cars on the road use that specific information. Formula E has a relevance because the battery levels that they're using now, if they can do a pit stop recharge of a battery in Formula E within the next 3 years, I think they're trying to target, in under 30 seconds, well, that changes the whole game of driving an electric car. You'll be able to pull into a petrol station, fill up your battery and drive off. You've done a recharge within the same amount of time it would have taken you to fill up your tank. Then that's changing the industry.
I can't remember. I went to a conference You may have been at it. It may have been one of the Black Book ones.
Oh, I actually might have been there.
And they were talking about, this is a couple of years ago, but even then they were talking about electric vehicles and stuff, and they were like, it's not going to be that far away that you're driving along the road and the road is recharging your car for you, because the road is made up of plates which have little chips in that can recharge as you drive along. You know, and Formula One, it's just not relevant. And you see it even now with brands switching across to Formula E, you know, that people want to be in that space regardless of what you think
strong
of the racing.
Strong manufacturers as well. Mm. Yeah. Then we talk a lot about females come out to the industry. Let's focus a bit more on female racing drivers. You've got W Series things like that. We talked about Jamie Chadwick.
Yep.
There's been a couple of female racing drivers in Formula E who've had a few skirts at it. Simona Di Silvestro, I think, got the longest.
Did you say they've had a few skirts at it?
Oh, no.
That's awkward, isn't it?
Applause.
I love it. Have you got
a... Well, actually, probably more like that one.
Yeah.
That's the one.
Definitely that one. No applause,
no applause for that.
Slow hand clap.
The thing is, though, there's only been a few women who've had... Simona got a full season.
Yes, Catherine Legg.
Catherine Legg got a few races. Michele Caruti got a few races. Forgive me if I'm missing anybody. I think
that's
I am.
There were three.
Yeah. So, you know... Great that they got in there in the first place, but where do you see it lying at the moment? W Series is obviously creating this huge platform and really cutting through, especially, so I'm very excited for the second season of that.
Me too.
So where do you see that in relation to Formula E and Formula One and other wider series?
I think we're still poles apart when it comes to that, which is frustrating. I enjoyed the first season of W. I think there's so much that they can do, so far that they can go, and to get anybody getting their bums on seats in a car, a single-seater car, is incredible. Mm. You know, people are getting the opportunity to do stuff that they couldn't do previously. However, I'm not convinced it's addressing the long-term problem. I still think it needs someone like a Red Bull to come on board and say, right, we are setting up a karting academy. Karting in this country has got ridiculous. It's very expensive, and they need to find a way of bringing the cost down so they get more bums on seats. It's a percentages game, so you get more girls coming in, you will get more girls rising up through the ranks and being able, with the racecraft that they've learnt in karting, to be good enough to be anybody. Because it's okay, there's a little bit of power involved, and power steering is probably the biggest inhibitor to females reaching the top at the moment, because an F1 car does not have power steering yet. The lower categories do, which is silly. If they get rid of power steering, they'll find girls automatically coming up because they'll be able to handle the cars more, and it'll be a more effective judge of what they can do in Formula One. But we are getting more girls interested. I'm seeing more girls at racetracks. I still think there's a massive gulf, and we're looking at probably people who are being born today, maybe, will potentially be able to make it through and really challenge an F1. And, you know, I feel for the likes of Jamie Chadwick and Alice Powell and all of those girls right now who are doing a cracking job. They've arrived to the game a little late.
Yeah. Yeah. It's exactly what we discussed with Catherine. It's a similar sort of conversation where we felt that this, it's like you're saying, they're just slightly too early to really push on and get into Formula One, despite being, you know, obviously extremely quick drivers, but perhaps two or three generations behind, you know, when they start at that early karting stage, and, you know, maybe might be able to get there. But like you say, I think we're a little way off. But I think, you know, Catherine acknowledged that, didn't she? You know, she agreed that it's not, they're not at that point yet, but you've got to start somewhere. And like you say, getting bums on seats is the most important thing, and increasing participation. So,
and inspiring that person who's, you know, just being born in the next couple of years, picking up a cart and going.
I'm having a little girl in June.
Right,
she's
so
going to go
your job.
She's going to be the one. Imagine that. Okay,
can we get her on the podcast?
Wait. Let's say 20 years. 20 years from now, my daughter, unborn daughter, is going to be Formula One world champion.
Well, that's on record.
There's a
sound.
He's
going to be champion.
Yeah, yeah.
All right, okay.
Yeah, why not?
Because my daughter, who is now 3.5.
Oh, she'll be
there. She's missed the boat.
She's too old. Or Nikki. There's a whole load of us with children at the moment.
Yeah,
who are
Arthur.
Like,
she's got an Arthur.
That's
an
true.
Arthur.
She's got a boy, so that's not going to work. But I think the more females you have generally in a business, in a sport, whatever it may be, the more we'll feel like they can be part of that.
Yeah.
So yeah, let's see what happens. But I am delighted that, you know, things are starting to change, albeit slowly.
Yeah. Well, that's the main thing, isn't it? And listen, we don't usually talk techie on here, do we? We don't really delve into aerodynamics and things like that. We did a little bit with Karun. No.
But shame, because I find that really turns people on at home.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to do it. I'm going to break our own rule here.
What are you doing, Tim?
Okay.
All right, go on then. Well, make it interesting.
I'm curious as to what you think F1 is going to be like in 2021. Even with our limited aerodynamic knowledge, we know about the rule changes. And do you see this as a positive, a negative? Do you think it's going to reset the grid? Can we see Mercedes, the dark force, eventually being toppled off?
Any major rule change like this, we'll see a rejigging of the order. Because you have these exceptional people in Formula One who are just incredibly bright, and they can look through a rule book and they will see the areas which are grey, and they'll say, okay, I think we can get the best out of this, we'll put it with that, we'll marry them together, and hey presto, we've got a car. Now, the first time they have track action with that car is either a filming day or the first day of testing. They've never run it on track before.
Yeah.
They don't really know. I mean, they've got clues from all the testing they've done, how aerodynamically efficient it is, how many points of downforce it's got. They have clues, but they don't really know, and they don't know where anybody else is either. Mm. So I always find Australia utterly fascinating, because it's the real gauge that you get of, okay, how good are these cars? And yeah, it's a quirky track, so sometimes the results are really mixed up compared to, you know, like a Spain or something. But
it can lull you into a bit of a false sense of security.
It's just fascinating. So yes, I think 2021 will be different. The cars will look different, obviously.
Yeah, very different.
It will feel different to everybody. However, my concern is that the budget cap hasn't come in time, so that you've still got this massive void between the teams that have and the teams that don't.
Yeah.
So it's like, you know, Newbury getting through in the FA Cup. They won't have the same resources as a Manchester City.
Yeah.
And so whilst they're doing brilliantly and they're getting extra money because they're successful and they're having a good year, the longevity of that is limited. Mm-hmm. So I feel like your Red Bull, Mercedes and Ferrari will predominantly be the top three teams. Mm-hmm. You know, McLaren, great, they've had a good year. After disastrous years, actually, what is flattering them, what is true, we don't know. So it's going to take huge investment from a company like McLaren to start to try and claw their way back to a Red Bull. You could get, you know, a Braun year where we get a freakish result because someone's done an amazing job with those results. Look at testing next year if you're a betting person, by the way, because you will get a massive indication of who's done well. And the bookies don't look at it. I shouldn't be endorsing betting, I'm sure, but
have
a drink, sit down, look at testing and work out, okay, I'm going to put all of my money on X, because the people that got behind the Braun and Jenson Button made a fortune, because the bookies don't look at anything until it's too late.
Yeah. Let's change it up now. That's the aerodynamic talk out of the way, so welcome back.
I didn't even talk about aero, it was brilliant.
No, to be fair.
We like
I think it's time for a game.
Yes.
Yeah?
Monopoly?
You wish.
Triple Pursuit?
So, Jenny Gow, this is our Motor Mouths game. It changes every week, depending on the guest, and it's getting harder each week because it started out with team radio clips, and I get guests to basically guess who was saying what. Team radio dries up eventually.
Steering wheels!
So, for you, I've changed up a little bit. Now, let me get my piece of paper here with all my answers on it. So, okay, so this is your first clip.
So, I think it tells something about the great minds our team has, and for sure it's not an easy thing to, you know, start making it and designing it and then actually make it work as it is now, and we're still learning about the system and the potential, but I think in some kind of circumstances it can be pretty good. But
so who is talking and what are they talking about? So this, I'll give you a clue, this is very recent, this is from Formula One testing.
The annoying thing is I know the voice really, really well. That is... See, I thought Kimi at first, but it's not Kimi. And then I thought Ericsson, and I'm like, no, that's way off. It's Bottas talking about DAS. So Mercedes,
yes.
Bottas, DAS.
Well done.
And that is the dual-axis steering system.
Yes.
Wow. Which,
yes.
Well done. That was good.
That was very, I thought you might get Bottas, but I didn't think you might get the Dash.
Yeah.
Well, that is one. Is it still playing? No, it's not. Oh, it is.
Yeah. I mean, he can go on until the end of the show,
really,
just in the background.
Can't it? Yeah. God, well, okay, that's one in the bag. Let's move on to clip number two. Okay, so for this one, you need to keep in mind who's talking and sort of what's happened.
Yes! Let's go, boys!
What did I
do? That slap!
In la procedure,
Now, a clue, you've just got back from where this taking place.
Marrakesh? Okay. Oh, so that would have probably been Jean-Eric Vergne. Hang on a minute. No, because the French... Yeah, that's not... Interesting. I will...
Gonna have to hurry you.
Okay, I'll just go Jean-Eric Vergne. Well, it's... Oh, no, this is so stressful. Okay, I'm going to go Felix da Costa winning in Marrakesh.
Oh, thank God you went for the second one. That's correct. That is da Costa just celebrating.
It was
celebrating.
The French voice at the end. He tried to put a dummy on me. Portuguese there.
No, exactly. So that is, da Costa winning in Marrakesh.
You gave me a massive clue, in fairness.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Thank you.
Sometimes I'm very kind, sometimes I'm very harsh. So far, but you're doing very well, Sifis. That's two.
Not pissed you off yet.
We've got two more to go.
Okay.
Okay, so this one is related to you. Can you finish the sentence?
Helmet.
Oh,
pardon. No.
No?
Not quite. No, okay. Here we go.
Now, breaking news just reaching us this morning. BMW Sauber today.
Before I added that in, I had to make that long because Tim had just put, now, breaking news reaching you, and I went... That could be anything to
it. I probably would have got it, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah, okay, so
go on. What do you think?
So that's me on Sky Sports News. It's breaking the story that they were pulling out of Formula One. My hair is very short.
I'm speaking
slightly out the side of my mouth, which I tend to do in studio settings. But yes, that was when I was working... Sky.
Yeah, no, correct. That's one in the bag again.
The beauty of those days when I had hair and makeup every day. You will never understand the joy of this, boys.
Because you don't need it for radio, do you?
Is this... who's the top scorer at the moment?
So you've got... Abby Eaton got 3.5.
Okay.
Catherine Bonmuir.
Yeah. I mean, tell me Muir.
Sorry, Catherine.
Tell me Muir. Catherine von Muir got 2. So far, you're... I mean, if you get this right, you're top of the leaderboard for the next one.
Pressure,
okay. So you ready for your final clip?
Yeah.
Let's do it.
We're here at Elvington Aerodrome to see an attempt made on the world solo land speed record.
What?
So, I've done the rounds, as you can tell.
Yeah, you really
that
have.
That was for the world blind land speed record on a motorbike.
Yeah.
And he was amazing. Like, totally amazing. How do you even go straight? So I was with Sam Bird the other day at the Virgin Sim.
Oh,
I got to go in a sim. Incredible.
Amazing.
Thank you to them, former A4, for organising it. We put a blindfold on Sam to see how well he could do.
Oh, I saw this. Yeah.
It's on the BBC Sport website. You can have a look.
He was hopeless.
He couldn't even get down the start-finish straight.
Yeah.
So he went... First of all, he went off into the grandstand on the right-hand side. So next time, he obviously overcompensated and went off into a flower bed on the left-hand side. Oh. It is so difficult when someone takes away one of your major faculties to be able to do anything.
That's fascinating and brilliant as well. And
a new
to
leader.
Top it all, you're the new leader of the Motormouth
leaderboard.
So... Now we can pay the applause. So Jenny Galgos,
you did go easy on me, in fact.
Well, to be fair, some of them could
the
have been very different.
One wasn't
and
that
considering
easy.
You, well, I was a bit worried when you were like, you've got no short term memories. I was like, oh, God, how are you going to do for this?
That's all quite long term.
That's quite long. That's why I thought, let's play for
I
that.
I thought you were going to play something else, actually, and I'm really relieved that you didn't.
What do you think I was going to play?
There's two pieces of audio, one from Canada 2011.
Oh, yes.
Where my Twitter just went mad. This is quite rude, I'm sorry, but that's me. And I was talking to Colin Farrell.
As you do.
Who was there. And I went up to him, and it was pouring with rain, obviously, 2011. And I said to him, thank you so much for being on the show. How are you? He said, I'm very good. How are you? And I said, I'm just really wet. Oh my God, I go back to the press.
Why did that one not come up when I was...
And the other one was talking about... I was looking for Manisha Kaltenborn.
Oh, yes.
On the grid. She was the team principal of Sauber. And I'm filling. I've got someone in my ear telling me, right... I mean, you've been on the grid with me.
I have, yes.
So you know what it's like. It's hairy,
it's
Harry.
Crazy.
And you're trying to find somebody and you've got someone talking in your ear about keep going, blah, blah, blah. And I'm walking around and I can't see her anywhere and I'm just filling with words. And I said, I was doing this description of what I was seeing. So I was like, and there's, you know, Kamui Kobayashi with his shiny cherry red helmet. I've been on innuendo bingo so many times. Coleman's balls as well. I mean, every time I open my mouth, filth comes out.
Oh,
it's not even intentional.
I wish I'd come up with it.
I tried to find it. I can't bloody find it. It's really annoying because we can play it live through there. I'm going to have to find it.
Add it. I'll do it in the post edit.
Let's all just laugh and go, Jenny's an idiot.
Oh dear. I remember watching Canada 2011 vividly. I just love the fact that the race went on. I bet you hated it, but the fact that it went on for so long. Although, to be fair, that was your first one.
It was
saying.
My first
race.
Yeah,
so what a baptism of fire.
I knew no one in the paddock. Like, I didn't come into the job as an F1 aficionado.
No.
I had very few links to the sport. I'd done MotoGP the year previously, so all of my head was just going, don't say riders. All of a sudden, we have a four-hour race with a two-hour rain delay, and we are filling.
Yeah.
I mean, forget Kamui's shiny red helmet. We are talking we are talking about, you know, oh, there's a puddle here and someone's just walked through it. I was just clutching at straws.
Yeah.
So hence trying to grab anybody that I could.
Yeah.
I actually went up to who I thought was the press officer for Lotus at the time and said, do you mind if I speak to Colin? Because he's, you know, I'm really desperate. I just need to speak to somebody. Turns out that was not the press officer, Andy Stobart. It was actually Bruno Senna.
Oh, God.
Oh, no!
Oh, that's awkward.
How stupid am I?
Was he like, yes?
He was really kind about it.
I bet he was.
He was like, just go ahead and ask him. I mean, he was curious as to why I was asking.
Yeah.
I think. But, I mean, one of the things when you're a broadcaster, especially in live broadcasting, is that you can't be precious about the mistakes you make. And if you're a bit stupid about something, you just have to call yourself out and say, yeah, okay, I was an idiot. But we're all going to have those moments in life where you kind of want the ground to open up and take you away. But the reality is those are the moments that endear in your mind, will always be with you. And if you can't laugh about them, you will become over precious and it could really hurt your soul. You just have to go, okay,
gotta brush it off.
I'm a bit of a div. Fine, I'm a goober.
People will forgive you. A goober. Like that. I'm going to use that. Listen, we haven't got too much longer left.
Sorry.
So we'll fire a few quick fire questions at you. So tell us what you're rubbish at.
Interviewing.
Identifying Bruno Senna.
I'm rubbish at going out to eat because I'm allergic to so many things, or I just don't eat so many things, so it becomes a real chore.
God, so you're rubbish at eating?
I can do the actual, you know, thing of eating.
You can
quite well. Knife and fork skills.
How do you find that traveling around the world
fine.
Then?
Nightmare.
And eating and all that.
Better now, actually, because everyone's like, "Ooh, vegan."
But have you got any pets? Yes.
No.
I thought you had a dog.
No, dead.
Oh,
awkward.
That's awkward. Should we just wrap up now?
No, I have a daughter instead. She's feral. She's feral enough to be a pet. Fine.
How old is she?
3.5. Isabel.
It's a nice name.
Brilliant fun.
Any hidden talents that the public aren't aware of? Nothing? Can you
sing? Can we do a trio?
That is not going to impress people. Hidden talents. I can drive quite fast.
Okay. That's a talent.
That's quite a hidden talent because I don't tell too many people about it. I can't drive very fast in a sim without crashing. That's disappointing. So just trying to think if I've got any other hidden talents. I mean, what little talent I have to, you know, be quite enthusiastic about. So I'm not sure I've got any.
Let's stick with journalism and broadcasting.
Well, who would you say then is, it could be broadcasting, motorsport related or otherwise, is a hero for you, that someone you've looked up to over the years?
So many. I think I'm inspired really easily because I'm blown away by so many people and their natural and hidden talents. I think Claire Balding I always looked up to when I was... There are some of the older broadcasters who I grew up with listening on the radio. And yeah. So I had a huge amount of time for them. I think there are so many people that do an amazing job. Like Kate Adie, when I was growing up, I wanted to be a war correspondent. That was the first gig I wanted in journalism. And then I saw a dead body and thought, maybe not. Mm. So, yes, I have lots of people who influence my career.
Yeah. Should we do the final four?
Yeah, let's do it.
Shall I kick off?
Go for it.
What's got you excited at the moment?
Frozen 2 coming out on DVD, because then I can stop spending a fortune on taking my daughter to the cinema. Mm-hmm. Because she wants to go and see it every other week, if not every week. And I have to say, no, it's coming out on DVD, so we don't have to go to the cinema anymore. So that's exciting.
Does she wear the dress?
No. She's not a big fan of dressing up.
Oh, fair dues.
But, yeah, and she did some broadcasting for me yesterday, which was very exciting as well. Yeah, she did a remix of Twinkle Twinkle Little Star.
Nice.
When's that being released?
Probably not. I feel like her vocal talents are other...
Still developing.
But her microphone technique is fantastic. Oh, cool. That's so weird. and the season. I still love motorsport. Mm. I'm terrified coronavirus is going to knock out most of the season.
Yes.
But at the moment, as things stand, I'm getting on a plane next week. I will fly to Australia. And I don't know who will win the first race.
No, that is exciting.
So,
yeah. You know. If not broadcasting, what do you think you'd be doing?
I knew you'd probably ask this question, and I tried to think about it. Probably home economy, which you probably go,
what
is that?
What is that? Yeah.
That is exactly what I'm thinking.
So, it's making food look good and educating people about food and potential recipe development and things like that. So that's what I wanted to do when I was younger. And
that's quite a niche subject.
Yes, it really
subject.
Is.
Yeah.
Very niche. But I love cooking. Oh, maybe that can be my secret.
I was going to say, this sounds like a hidden talent.
I make banana bread than Abby.
Oh, okay.
Can I go with that? I've never tried hers, but I'm just going to say it because no one will know.
That's a bold claim.
But yeah, I think I'm a good cook.
Yeah.
And I would have liked to have gone into some form of cookery. And at the time, I was really fascinated with how they made roast chicken look so good on the box of a roast chicken, because my roast chickens never kind of look like that. And they use creosote.
What?
Yeah, in the old days. I'm not sure they can get away with it anymore.
As in the stuff you paint your fence with?
Yes. Oh, God. So they would creosote the chicken to make it look delicious.
That's terrible.
And golden. And I was fascinated with all of that. So that's possible.
Is it always is it the food you see on adverts and things like that? I can't remember where I saw it, but they always said it was cold. It's never hot. It's always cold. I don't know if that's a factor as well.
I don't know. I mean, how do they make the M&S chicken that they cut open?
Or
they get turkey
steam.
At Christmas and the steam
dry ice.
Comes up.
I feel like it's something
it's
like
is.
I don't know. I think I feel like I watched a program where they looked into that once and it was like, it's all kind of smoke and mirrors.
Yes,
literally.
I mean it really is the magic of food photography and all of that stuff. Really intrigued me. So
celebrity Master Chef.
Ooh. I have actually asked, this is how sad I am, definition of goober, I've actually asked twice to be on Celebrity MasterChef because it would be like a dream come true.
Yeah.
And
that would be awesome.
I just never get any response back. So I would love to do it. I'm addicted to Australian MasterChef, which I think is probably the best programme on television.
Really? I've never watched it.
It's good. Long. I mean, it's really...
It's a lot more dramatic, I think, as well.
A lot more time into it. But they're more talented than our MasterChef professionals are, I think. They're incredible.
Two questions to go. How much of your success is about luck and right time, right place, and how much do you put down to hard work?
None of it's down to luck. All of it is down to me being brilliant.
There we go. I knew it was.
Always. But I was
that
predicting that as the answer.
Rubbish. Yeah. a little bit of both.
We're just going to cut that bit there so she sounds
really conceited, arrogant. Yeah. I mean, again, Twitter stream is going.
At Jenny Gow.
Yeah.
And finally.
Oh, no, just go at Nikki Shields.
At Nikki Shields. She'll love that. Yeah. what are you scared of, Nikki Shields?
Abby, Catherine, you name it. What am I scared of? Coronavirus?
Yes.
I think is the biggest, genuinely, the biggest fear at the moment.
Really?
Because someone wrote an article yesterday highlighting who it would be good for that the MotoGP season has been delayed.
Right.
And who it would be bad for. And the simple answer that I wrote back to him, and he'd spent a long time crafting this article, which was beautifully written. And I just said, well, for anyone that's freelance, it's a nightmare. And anyone who's got a job, it's great. Mm. And that's the reality of it. I'm a freelance broadcaster. I'm a jobbing presenter still. I think anybody right now who is freelance, no matter what your position is, no matter what your role is, and the industry that you work in, is cacking themselves.
Yeah, 100%.
Because they're like, okay, well, how am I going to pay the bills? Yep. If I can't go to work, I can't leave the house, maybe even if I have to self-quarantine for 14 days because I've just gone through, you know, Dubai on the way back from Australia, or I've gone to Bahrain or whatever it is.
Mm.
How am I going to pay the mortgage? And I think it's a genuine fear that a lot of us have right now.
Yeah, absolutely. Wow. No, yeah. Four very good answers to the final four. Thank you very much. Well, listen, Jenny Gow, we've just about run out of time, but thank you very much for coming to see us here in our little part of London. I'm sure we'll see you in a paddock very soon. Thank you very much for joining us, Jenny Gow, ladies and gentlemen.
You're welcome. Thank you. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. I don't know how to close the show now. I've got no, I've been throwing to next. I don't know.
Thank you so much for listening and giving up your time for us. We'll be back with another episode soon. If you have missed any of the previous episodes, you can take a hop back in your chosen podcast player and find them all there. And don't forget, there's also loads more content on MMTV and the Motormouth app available to download on any device now. Like, subscribe and review if you feel so inclined. It really helps people to find the podcast. And you can find us on social media as well. Twitter at Motormouth _, Instagram is at Motormouth _official, and on Facebook, just search Motormouth. In the meantime, from myself and Tim, we'll catch you next time.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.